This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey, everybody. It's the Hockey News Podcast. Matt Larkin here with Ken Campbell and Ryan Kennedy. I'm going to start right now by throwing Ken under the bus because he said that Blade Runner sucks, and that's BS. And I think Ken's in the minority.
Okay, well, let's
and he's talking about the old one, not the new one, which is also awesome.
So this weekend, we, you know, as a family, we thought, okay, well, we want to see the new Blade Runner, but none of us had seen the, well, actually, my oldest son, who's 21, had seen the old Blade Runner. He loves it. So we decided we would watch the original Blade Runner. And I keep talking to people who appreciate cinema and appreciate movies and know what a good movie is and a bad movie is, and they all think it's great. I thought it sucked. Yeah, I mean,
it's kind of boring.
It's not.
Yeah, it's pretty
contemplative
boring.
Contemplative science fiction. Science fiction is supposed to be stately and slow and focus on.
And it's supposed
visuals.
To be nighttime all the time. And it's supposed to be pissing down rain.
It's a film
all
noir
the time.
Story.
Yeah, film noir, which is French for sucks crap. Like, no, sorry. But I just kept waiting for that movie to mean something. I kept waiting
for
that movie to get good, and it never did. I found the plot to be really, really pedestrian.
I don't think Ken understands the plot, everybody.
I understand.
We were talking about it earlier, and
I
don't think he understood.
I understand the plot. I knew the unicorn scene.
Expire.
I knew in the unicorn scene.
Spoiler alert.
They put that in there because they wanted to create some ambiguity as to whether or not this guy was a robot or not. I get the whole thing. I just didn't think the plot was very well done. I thought it was really pedantic, and I didn't like it.
It's very influential, but when you look at it from these days, like, even if you go back to some, like, classic movies from the 80s, they're really slow.
Yeah, it's a generational thing where people expect quick cuts, and they're not even quick cuts, but just a long shot.
Like, we want our movies to be, like, denser now, and they have to, like, you know, they gotta be tight.
Okay, so just so we're clear here, okay? All you people who hate me, and there's a lot of you, I didn't bring this up, okay? Like, I'm responding to something that you brought up, Matt.
No,
okay?
Ken texted me on Friday night and was like, this movie sucks. So technically Ken
brought it up. No, I texted you and I said, I'm watching Blade Runner, the original, right now. And and the reason why I texted you is because I trust your commentary on movies because you know a lot about it and everything. And I said, is it just me or is this an effing terrible film?
And I said, it's just you, bro.
No, you said it's me. No, the first thing you sent back was, it's very polarizing. Some people like it. Mm. Some people hate
it. It's generational because it's polarizing when it came out in 1982.
What do you mean it's generational? I'm 55
That's what I'm saying. So everyone who was roughly my age when it came out didn't like it at the time, or a lot of people, but since it's grown in popularity, so it seems like the next generation.
Oh, so it's like Rogi Vashon. Wasn't good enough to get in the Hall of Fame, but 35 years later, somehow got really good. Rogi Vashon somehow got better over 35 years and became Hall of Fame.
It's a good transition.
That's what it's like. That's what it's like, right, Matt?
Because it's a good transition to start talking about hockey. So yes, Rogi Vashon, that's right. We're starting to see a little bit of separation in the standings from some have and have-not teams. It's still very early, but I'm curious what you guys think so far. Are you seeing an alpha dog team emerging as the best team in the NHL right now that you're afraid of?
I'm seeing two of them, and they're two teams that I think everybody here and a lot of people in the hockey world thought, and I mean it's early, so let's put that into that contextual framework, okay? Yeah. It's early, okay? But I mean, two teams that I think people thought were on the downside, Chicago and LA, have been lights out this year. I've been watching LA's games, and I mean, Dustin Brown looks like a new player. Dustin Brown looks like, I talked to their assistant GM, Mike Fiuta, before the season started, and he was telling me that, you know, Dustin Brown came into camp and he was like a different player. Last year was a very, very difficult year for him with the leadership transition and a lot of other stuff. And he said that, you know, he's got that all sort of behind him now. And, you know, that top line with Kopitar, Brown, and Ifalo on the other side, and Kopitar is producing now. And Jonathan Quick is lights out. They've been very, very impressive in my opinion.
Yeah. And obviously with the coaching change, I think it's kind of clear, at least in the early going, that Daryl Sutter's expiration date had been well past beyond, and bringing in John Stevens to that bigger role, obviously paying off dividends. And I totally agree with Chicago as well, because coming into the season, we thought like, you know, they had to make more cap sacrifices and the depth isn't what it used to be. But on the other hand, that depth is coming through. Mm-hmm. Ryan Hartman having big games and, you know, putting up a 10 spot against Pittsburgh, and the only person, you know, not getting a point was Alex DeBrincat, who would then tally later on that week. They still have the vaunted core. And I think what I like about Chicago that makes me believe a little more is they know how to do it. Yeah. And, yeah. You know, that I think that, you know, in the loss to Toronto, you saw a Leafs team that is probably the next generation coming up, and Chicago should be worried about them in the long term, but the Leafs are still finding their way as a cohesive unit, whereas the Blackhawks, they've done this before. They got the rings. You know, Brandon Saad looks fantastic, so obviously that trade worked out for them.
And Corey Crawford's been terrific, too.
And Corey Crawford's been terrific. So you have everything you need, and the defense corps hasn't let them down. That was one concern we had, is do they have the depth on D anymore? But they've been fine, so they have all those elements.
Keith and Seabrook are still playing. Like, Keith's playing 28 minutes a game. Mm-hmm. I think that to me it looks like it's weird because these things seem to go in trends, but it seems to me now the West has kind of, you know, I mean, there's Connor McDavid, there's the Oilers, but the West has kind of slowed up a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that plays into teams' success like LA and Chicago a lot more. Mm-hmm. You know, they're able to keep pace with the teams in their own divisions, figuratively and literally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then when they end up playing a Toronto, which was a week ago yesterday or a week ago today, that game, Chicago had no answer for Toronto's
speed. Yeah.
They had, like, Duncan Keith had no answer for Auston Matthews' speed.
Mm-hmm.
And, and so, you know, maybe in the head-to-head matchup it's a little dicey, but I think in their own conference they can really hang with those guys.
And I mean, it will be key too with both these franchises to see what their second halves are like, because it's all well and good for these veteran players to have great starts when they have the fresh legs, but what does Duncan Keith look like in game 73? What does Dustin Brown look like in game 77? That to me is still a question, but I think so far it's very good signs for both.
Well, to me it's more what does, you know, Jan Rutta look like in game 73? Mm-hmm. What does Michael Kempney look like in game 73? I know Duncan Keith in game 73 is going to be still pretty good.
Yeah.
And I think Dustin Brown is enough of a pro that he's going to be okay. I wonder, what's Johnny Brodzinski going to look like in game 73? Yeah.
And the thing with LA, I mean, I trust Chicago a little more than I trust LA, because to me it's actually a bit concerning that the only guys who are scoring for LA are all the oldies, the old favorites. So it's great Kopitar is playing better, but when Dustin Brown is suddenly hot, like you said, Ryan, I don't know that Dustin Brown's going to stay hot all year. Mm-hmm. I think what you would wanted to see for LA is, hey, Adrian Kempe is playing great. He's got three goals so far.
Yeah.
Whereas Chicago, you're seeing new guys step up. Youth is coming in. Ryan Hartman's playing really well. So I believe it more from Chicago. But in terms of the question of who's the alpha dog, I think, you know, what was glossed over is, you know, Duncan Keith's playing great. Oh, but wait, he got Auston Matthews skated circles around him. To me, the Leafs are not a complete team per se, but they look like the scariest team in the league to me. They look like they can hang with anybody.
Yeah.
They've been dominant in most of their games. Even their loss to New Jersey, I think the shot total was still heavily skewed in their favor, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, the thing about that game is
they can come back so fast in games. Mm-hmm. They can flick a switch. And Frederik Andersen's not playing well right now, but last year he was playing poorly and the team started mediocre.
Yeah.
This year the team can score so much that even with Andersen starting slowly, they're still 4-1. What happens when Andersen starts to play better, which I'm sure he will?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, the thing with that New Jersey game was they outplayed New Jersey, but the chances they gave up were insane. They got scored against on a 5-on-3.
Yeah.
Woo! You know.
Yeah.
So I mean that was a bit of an anomaly, but I think it also was a bit of a reality check for this team that you know they can't play that way ultimately.
Yeah.
They can't. And you wish they could. You wish they could,
but you
can't. Like, you can't play like that in the playoffs. It just, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. And I wish it did, because it's damn fun to watch.
What about Pittsburgh, though? Could you argue that Pittsburgh made it work in recent years? They won with pure speed, a lot of offense, and a sort of no-name defense that just kind of flung the puck up the ice. But I'd say those teams are characterized by being very aggressive offensively.
And but those teams weren't as loose defensively as this team is. And you say they flung the puck up the ice. At least they did that. Yeah. You know, at least they did that. They got it out of danger. They got it off the boards. They cleared it off the glass. And, you know, I mean, the good thing about that is, you know, you don't have to be Nick Lidstrom to get the puck out to Sidney Crosby and all those other guys and Evgeny Malkin and that. You know, I mean, so as long as you put it out somewhere, they're going to pick it up and make something happen. But I see this Leaf team that, you know, defensively they've got some flaws. And again, it's not like they're not a team that like gives up 35 shots a game. It's the problem with the Leafs, I think, in my opinion, the one flaw they have is that the chances they give up are $10. Mm-hmm. Like, they give up lots of really, really good chance. Not a lot, but when you're giving up chances like that, you're going to get scored upon more often than not, and then you have to outscore the other team. You have to make it a track meet. That, ultimately, I don't know that is a recipe for success.
And when they have defensive breakdowns, it really is, like, all over the place. Like, yeah, it's a fire drill. Like, you can see the guys sort of looking, their heads are on a swivel, and the worst sense of that word, where they're chasing the play, and that's where they really get bogged down.
Austin Matthews with two pretty spectacular overtime winners already. Right now, I mean, where do you rank Austin Matthews in the world? I mean, since his career started, only Crosby has more goals. Again, six games into the season, but I'm just curious. Yeah. I mean, it also involves a bit of projection.
Yeah.
But it seemed like, compared to, let's say, a McDavid, they're obviously going to be compared to each other a lot. No one would ever have chosen Austin Matthews over McDavid in a one-on-one offer even a month ago. But has anything changed there? Have we underestimated? We know who Connor McDavid is. He's elite. He's going to be a Hall of Famer if he stays healthy. But have we underestimated what Austin Matthews is?
Well, I think we have. And I mean, again, let's. I can't say this enough. It's early. Okay, like
I think Austin, it's late. Matthews, I think it's late, guys.
Yeah, Austin, no, but Austin Matthews went, 12, 13, 15 games without a goal last year at one point.
And he still scored 40.
Yeah. And so that could happen again, I suppose. It doesn't look like it. Mm. He's putting together a Hart Trophy season right now. You know, I mean, if he keeps this up, he will be, probably will win the Hart Trophy. And I'm going to go one step further. The Toronto Maple Leafs have been in the NHL for 100 years. They've had two Hart Trophy winners. In 54-55, Ted Kennedy won the Hart Trophy, and then I think 43-44, Babe Pratt won it. 54-55, Ted Kennedy did not deserve the Hart Trophy. Anybody who knows hockey history knows that he was not the MVP that year. It was a going-away present, a retirement present for Ted Kennedy. So they have not had a Hart Trophy winner since 43-44. So this is the kind of player we're talking about here. And I'm going to go a step further. And I'm going to say that Austin Matthews has a chance to become the first true superstar this franchise has ever had. Mm-hmm. This franchise has never had a quote-unquote, in my definition of superstar, has never had a superstar. As good as Frank Mahovlich was, as good as Dave Keon was, as good as Doug Gilmour was, as good as Boris Salming was, as good as Charlie Conacher was, as good as Phil Apps was, they weren't in that superstar realm. And I think this guy absolutely has the opportunity to do that and probably will do it.
Yeah. They never had a player who was one of the best in the league
for a sustained period of time.
And I think what you're seeing with Matthews is that he's knocking down every challenge that they put in front of him. So we knew he had the talent right off the hop. It's like, okay, well, how will he do when teams are focusing in on him? Well, apparently fine, because he was walking, you know, multiple Norris winner Duncan Keith on a regular basis against Chicago. And he can take on top lines, and I think that it's a huge matchup problem now for teams, because you know the Leafs are going to want to put Nazem Kadri out there against other top lines, and it's just a big advantage. And again, like, you look at what he does in clutch situations, and for me it's always been, you know, the sort of deadly little secret to Austin Matthews is that he uses so many different release points on his shot that goalies, they kind of have to guess. And
yeah,
the
yeah.
scary thing, you know, if you go to the Montreal game, Carey Price, he's not off to a good start, fair enough. But, I mean, Carey Price is one of the most intimidating goaltenders in the world. There's a lot of shooters out there that
Pecked
just assume...
Picked him apart.
Yeah, a lot of shooters just assume they can't beat Carey Price.
Yeah.
Where Montreal has gotten into problems in the past couple of years is if you get shooters that aren't afraid of Carey Price. Tampa Bay showed it in the playoffs a couple of years ago. Auston Matthews already has it. I think it was his first preseason game against Montreal. He winged one past Price. But we saw it in the Montreal game where he took him out twice. And that's a big problem if you're Montreal because yeah. that's your main winning strategy right now is Carey Price bailing you out. And if Auston Matthews can put one or two past him every game, that puts you in a tremendous deficit. And if you can beat Carey Price on a regular basis, then who can't you beat?
Well, the goal he scored to tie the game was like, I mean, he tracks all the way back into his own end, gathers it up, flips it over a guy's stick, you know, outskates him, goes in, and just puts a shot in the top corner that nobody can stop because Carey Price didn't stop it.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, this what this guy is doing, I mean, you keep thinking that you've seen everything and you keep thinking that there's nothing more that you can say about him. And it's almost like McDavid in that respect. Like, just when you think you've seen everything, he does it either again or does it goes one better.
Yeah.
And 58% on faceoff so far.
Well, it's funny. He reminds me...
And that's what Connor's not...
That's where Matthews has an edge. And Matthews reminds me a bit of bigger Pavel Datsyuk. He continues to remind me of bigger Pavel Datsyuk because he's so good at puck retrievals. He's so conscientious on his back checks, and he's just on the puck. He loses the puck, he just gets it back. And especially now if he's starting to become good at faceoffs. And it's interesting because after the Chicago game, Ken and I were at that game, and Jonathan Toews in the scrum was just commenting because they were asking him what he thought of Matthews, and he was saying he was so blown away by how big Matthews is. And that's the thing. I always forget that Matthews is still kind of a child, technically.
Yeah, yeah.
So he might not be done growing. And I noticed that in the summer when I was at the awards and saw him. And I think he got bigger, which is terrifying.
He's legit 6 foot two.
Yeah, you know what's funny is after that Chicago game, I was in Joel Quenneville's scrum. And Joel Quenneville doesn't like losing. He really doesn't. And he's not really talkative after losses. But it was almost like he was standing there and he had this sort of half-assed grin on his face because I think he was just like, but I think he was just like, what are we supposed to do against a guy like that? Like, yeah. Really, you know? I mean, and it was almost like, yeah, we lost, but I mean, I tip my hat to the kid. It was kind of interesting that way, you know?
And now we'll be accused of being Leaf fans because we just gushed about a really good player who happened to be a Leaf, right? By our readers, I'm sure it's going to happen. Looking at the standings...
We hate everybody, too.
Oh, yeah, of course. We hate every team, every player. Two teams that we expected to do a lot better that are starting pretty slowly. One is the New York Rangers, who've been... I guess pretty bad so far. Not that we picked them to be a Stanley Cup winner or anything like that, but we expected them to be kind of like a 100 points in their sleep type of team, like they're very deep. Mm-hmm. What do you think is wrong with them right now?
Well, their defense has been a mess so far.
Oh my God,
and they've been trying a couple of different combinations and, you know, scratching some guys, but it just feels like they haven't put it all together. And again, they're chasing the puck, they're missing assignments, and they've got some young guys that they're trying out, you know, Anthony D'Angelo, who I guess is now Tony D'Angelo.
Yeah, he's Tony now. He's Tony. He's reinvented himself.
Yeah. He needs
Tony D'Angelo.
Tony D'Angelo. He needs to reinvent himself one more time, because so far he's a defenseman that can't defend.
took the D out of D'Angelo.
They took the D out of D'Angelo, yeah.
Nice.
Well, he was always an offensive defenseman. But... Yeah, I think that's a big problem, and, you know, the goaltending has been, like, okay, but not obviously good enough, and that's a big thing, because they've got a nice array of forwards, but they don't have that necessary game-breaker right now, and when you don't, you know, we think of New York as a good defensive team with great goaltending, but maybe that was 3 years ago.
Well, down the middle, they're hurting, I think. I mean, Zibanejad's been very good, but... I mean, Kevin Hayes hasn't been very good, and they're hurting down the middle. I'm going to say something here that everybody's going to hate me. Yeah, you know, all Dom's going to hate me, but maybe getting rid of Dan Girardi wasn't the best idea.
Oh! I'm going to say Derek Steppen.
Steppen, yes.
Uh-huh.
But Girardi had a you know, his defense partner was Ryan McDonough. They were together. They were stable. You know, as good as many flaws as Girardi had, that was a stable defense pairing that they had together. McDonough's been playing with everybody right now. He's trying to find himself. They're trying to establish an identity. Mm-hmm. He's played with Shattenkirk. He's played with D'Angelo. He's played with Staal. He's played with Holden. He's played with this guy. He's played with, like, they can't find a partner for him that and they at least had that with Girardi. So I'm going to say that might, and I think the Derek Stepan thing, I think that's also a big factor for them, because they had in him, they had sort of that two-way guy that they could count on. And, I mean, I've never been a big Rick Nash guy. Never have been. Even when he was, I guess, in Columbus. But as long as he's been with the Rangers, I've never been a real big Rick Nash guy. Mm-hmm. And I just don't see a lot coming from him.
So you're saying Girardi's basically to you the equivalent of the catcher in baseball, the second catcher who bats like 158, but he can catch a knuckleball, so you keep him around because he's got great chemistry.
Well, it's funny because good guys in the room, right? Like, they talk about good guys in the room, and I remember a scout told me one time, the only problem with those good guys in the room is that they insist on going out on the ice, too. that's the problem with good guys in the room. But, I mean, there is something to be said for chemistry. There's a little bit to be said for being comfortable. There's a little bit, even if you're comfortable in that badness, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
At least there's that stability, and I don't see that there.
Well, it's funny too, because we all kind of assumed that Kevin Shattenkirk was the perfect foil for Ryan McDonough. Like, that was going to be the perfect pairing. Finally, McDonough's got his guy, and this is going to be an electric pairing. And sometimes it just doesn't happen. Sometimes Sidney Crosby and Phil Kessel don't work out on a line. And, I mean, luckily for Pittsburgh, they figured out a couple of lines that did work very well, and they got some cups for it. But, I mean, that is a big problem if your sort of solution in the summer doesn't pan out.
I think, too, the thing to remember is chemistry doesn't necessarily come overnight. So, you know, Girardi, like, what were Girardi and McDonough like in their first six games together? I don't remember, right? But it took a long time to build that chemistry. So I still think that's one where especially we want to stress that it's early. The one thing, though, I was worried about all along was the fallback behind Henrik Lundqvist. Lundqvist, the save percentage is .914, which is fine.
Which is okay.
Andre Pavlik, I think it's .860 the last I checked. It's such a huge downgrade from Cam Talbot and Antti Raanta. And we know Lundqvist is a goalie who does need to be spelled. As he's getting older, he's a bit more prone to injuries, strains, things like that. And there is no safety net behind him. So far, that's what Pavlik has proven. And I think one of you guys said before, Pavlik was the number three in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
A team that had like the second worst save percentage in the league.
A team that was dying to get to have someone. A team that paid
$4 million. They paid Steve Mason $4.1 million.
There's a team that's looking a little better too now.
Yeah, thanks ironically to Connor Hill.
That's right. That's a good use of ironically, by the way.
Thank you.
We talk a lot about it in the office. There's a lot of misuses of ironically, but that was actually
the good correct use of ironically.
Sometimes
it's actually coincidentally.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly, Kenjamin. Another team that I'm sure has its fan base a little panicky, partially because one of its stars is concussed, the Edmonton Oilers. And I don't know, we obviously were kind of driving the Oilers hype train. We had them going to the final.
Yeah.
Did we overestimate them? Is it way too early to panic? Is this Draisaitl injury really exposing them as a top-heavy team? What do you guys think?
I think it really is. And part of the problem is that Connor McDavid isn't good enough on faceoffs. His faceoff winning percentage has been not good. And he wasn't even taking most of the draws when Draisaitl was in the lineup. Draisaitl was taking a lot of the draws. And I think Connor's got to get better at that. Like Sidney Crosby, he did that. He didn't, you know, he came in his first year. They said he couldn't score enough. He didn't shoot enough. Comes back, leads the league in goals. You know, couldn't win faceoffs. Now he's one of the best faceoff guys in the league. The other 2 years ago when they won the cup, he channeled his inner Steve Yzerman and became a great defensive player. And I don't believe for one second that Connor McDavid is not capable of doing those things. Everything that he's shown us to this point in his career is that he not only is able, but is willing. But it comes to a point where, okay, the next summer or whenever he has time, like, okay, maybe not so much skill work. Maybe, maybe we're okay on the skill side.
Your skating's
maybe,
fine.
Yeah, maybe we're okay on the skating and skill side. It's like the Jacob Chychrun thing. Maybe we're okay on the conditioning side. Yeah. Maybe we should work a little bit on thinking the game a little more. With McDavid, it's the same thing. Maybe we're good there. Maybe
you already won the scoring
title.
Maybe
we devote a lot of our next summer to really getting some upper body strength and getting better on face. So it's that kind of thing. But, I mean, defensively, you're talking about defensively, they're a mess defensively too.
Yeah. And in the early going, at least, Cam Talbot not getting the same results as he did last year.
Nope.
I think, you know, Talbot, he's shown us enough that we know that he can be a very good NHL goaltender. So I'm not super worried about that. My concern would be, like, usage, for one, because they have Laurent Brossoit as their backup. And, you know, he's kind of an AHL tweener, I would say, at this point. So, like, what if Cam Talbot goes on, like, a really bad run? Or what if Cam Talbot gets hurt? I mean, he played more games than anybody else in the NHL last year, played more minutes than anybody else. And if he goes through a funk, then the Oilers would have to score themselves, you know, out of potential losses. And, I mean, so far, it hasn't worked out. And, like you said, you know, they don't have the depth right now. So that would be a concern of mine, is that it all kind of falls apart if they don't have goaltending. And that had been the case for years. And it looked like Talbot was the solution, but he needs to get on track, and if there's any kind of problems, then I think they might be in a bit of trouble.
And again, let's get the haters piling on me a little more.
The Ken Troll podcast.
Exhibit number 4,357, that fighting is meaningless and that it doesn't do anything and it doesn't change anything. Milan Lucic comes out in his first shift, fights Mark Borowetzky. It's supposed to be like this big momentum thing, and they had this week of hard practice, and they were sucking, and he's going to come out, and he's going to change the whole momentum and everything, and they lose
6-1. Ken's making quite a face right now.
And they lose 6-1. And they look shitty doing it, and they look terrible, and it didn't make a damn difference.
Yeah, that's true.
So there you go.
The secondary scoring, too. I mean, in the playoffs, what made them pretty dangerous is they got this secondary scoring. The Zach Cashins of the world were stepping up.
Yep.
Yeah. But I don't think you're seeing the same threats throughout the lineup. And so far, like Ryan Strome.
Who would have thought Zach Cashin would go cold? Amazing.
Yeah, I bought in. I shouldn't have bought all those Zach Cashin stocks. But also on the blue line, like Oscar Klefbom has been pretty disappointing. Also on my fantasy team. God damn it. But he's got no points last I checked. And I figured he was going to be a huge breakout guy playing on the power play. And he really showed a lot down the stretch. And the fact they're getting no offense from their blue line, I think, is also hurting things with the Oilers. So, I don't know. To me, it is early. I think they're going to be fine, but I think they've shown enough holes that maybe it's fair to say we might have overestimated
them. Well, I mean, our numbers guy, well, not ours anymore.
Our former numbers guy. Thanks, Athletic.
Dom Luschichin.
Loose chicken.
Luschichin, you know, has always maintained that they're a one-line team. And, I mean, if that's the case, then pretty easy to defend. I mean, you know, I mean, as much damage as Connor McDavid can do, you know, you mitigate that, and then if nobody else can do anything, then, you know, you can. That's a beatable team, right? Yeah,
that's how.
Especially
that's how
if they're not getting great goaltending.
Yeah. Anaheim, right? Anaheim is the exhibit A of how to.
Well, the other thing I wanted to mention about Austin Matthews: when are we going to see a team in 3-on-3 put out three defensemen against him? I'm not sure if that's the only way to stop this guy in 3-on-3.
Montreal, what I love.
Like, I'm not sure. Like, I don't. Like, how do you stop this guy 3-on-3?
Yeah, I don't think you do. And it was
score
sad.
First.
Montreal put out Thomas Plekanec and Paul Byron to start overtime. They were like, you guys win. They were so resigned to their fate that they put out their best defensive forwards. And to me, it was just, like, mentally, they just gave that game to the Leafs. And right away, what happens? They score. Mm-hmm. It's like Montreal had no interest even trying to win the game. Next up, speaking of Montreal, transition. Ken Dryden has been in the news this week talking about concussions and some interesting thoughts. And you know, we can't get into all of it. Maybe we can try and even get him on this podcast sometime soon, which would be cool. But the main point he's been making is, what if we, you know, change our approach to any contact to the head, whereas right now the player safety and the rule book, they permit incidental contact to the head. As long as the head isn't the principal or targeted point of contact, they accept that, hey, it's a hockey play and that's part of the game, it's a rough sport, there's always going to be some head contact. But what Dryden is saying is, why can't we treat the brain or the head like we treat eyes, where accidental or not, if you catch a guy with your stick, that's a penalty.
It over the glass, it's a penalty.
Yeah, it's a penalty. So he's tabling it as more of an absolute that even if it's accidental,
head contact should be always a penalty, in which case that would very much change the game. We would see a lot of, you'd see a big decrease in hitting, for sure. But how do you guys feel about it? Do you think it's there's something there?
This isn't new. Like, it's not new. I mean, Ken Dryden's saying it, so it has a lot of weight, and I thought he articulated his points very, very well in the piece that he wrote for the Globe and Mail this weekend. So it's not new. I mean, I think people have been saying it. And I mean, you know, Dave Branch has been a guy that's been an advocate of that sort of thing. So this isn't new. I think it's a good idea. I'm not one of these people that thinks that it'll lead to less hitting. I think it'll lead to more more prudent hitting. You know, hitting where guys realize what they're doing and are a lot more cognizant of what they're doing and you know the damage they can do. And I think players would adapt. I think it would be something where players would be able to adapt to it and it would be fine and we'd all go along and the game would be just fine.
Yeah, I guess my big concern is when you get into those situations where, you know, a shoulder is aimed at a shoulder and the player ducks or something to that regard where the intent was fine and the execution was actually fine, but, you know, and I don't want to sound like I'm blaming the victim here, but sometimes guys that get hit put themselves in vulnerable spots. Mm-hmm. They turn, they do silly things, they reach for pucks. Is a guy going to get suspended because a guy on the other team made a bad hockey play? That I have more questions than answers at this point.
And right now the answer is no, as it stands.
Yeah, but that would be my concern with these new rules. It's like, well, you hit him in the head. It's like, well, yeah, but he reached for the puck when I was already committed. Like, what was I supposed to do? You know, like leap over him? Or...
Yeah. And I'm skeptical that we're going to see the change just based... As someone who has been exposed a lot to Department of Player Safety, I've studied it a lot. The people that are working in that department, they're all hockey people, but they're all retired hockey people. So they played the previous generation of the game. And they do all have sort of a fondness for the physicality of the game. And they want to make the game as safe as possible. But if you talk to most of them, they have this respect for the... Not the violence is too strong a word, but the fact that the game does get physical. And I think there is that mentality of, hey, sometimes it's a hockey play.
I think that's part of the problem, Matt.
Yeah, mate. Well, I think that's a don't shoot the messenger here. I'm just saying what I've seen, okay?
Yeah.
And I think for that reason, I'm skeptical that you're going to see that wholesale of a change. But you never know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We can end it off with some reader questions, a couple. Run out of time here, but we'll start with Ernie Morris, who says, does John Tavares get traded or re-signed? Possible landing spots if a trade? Is Columbus a possibility?
Yes, Columbus is a possibility, I think. I mean, in division, but I mean, I've said since the beginning of this whole thing, of this whole soap opera, that John Tavares will not be playing for the New York Islanders when his contract's up. He won't be. He would have resigned by now, in my opinion. And I mean, everybody seems to make the very illogical leap that I've been saying that he's going to Toronto.
Yeah,
I said right from the start, he won't be playing for the New York Islanders. He won't be playing for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Mm.
There's 30 other teams out there. He'll be playing somewhere else next year. I don't know where that is. So if that's the case, I think then at the trade deadline or before, you've got to, you know, you owe it to your franchise to be able to say, look, we're not going to resign this guy. We have to see what we can get for him.
Can I put something out here that just makes so much sense to me right now?
No.
Fine. if you're going to trade John Tavares, in your scenario, Ken.
Yep.
Why don't you trade him to Colorado for Matt Duchene?
Interesting.
Both teams, like neither of these teams wants to be on the, you know, the decline. And Colorado is obviously building up, and Tavares is, he's actually the same age as Duchene, or pretty close to it, because they were drafted in the same draft class. But you know, you have a player who ironically is leading the Avs in scoring right now in Matt Duchene. But if you want to move him out and you want to get value, why not a player who can be your number one center? And maybe something goes with Duchene.
The only way I make that deal is if I can cut a deal with Tavares To sign him. That would be the only way. You know, I mean, you don't trade Matt Duchene for a rental when you're not even sure that you're good enough to be in the position to have a rental.
Clearly, you do a sign and trade, but it feels like that would be a pretty good option for both, for all involved.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
If you're gonna make the move, it's a good one.
It's weird. I see the opportunity for a Tavares trade coming down the road, especially if the Islanders, as we predicted, are not going to be in a playoff spot. But I don't have faith that the current GM of the Islanders is going to be able to pull off said trade. And just based on the experience I've had talking to people around the game, agents, people close to the team, I don't think there's a lot of love for Snow's negotiating style, and there's a sense that he's a pretty stubborn dude. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if the Islanders think there's a chance that they can bring back Tavares, they're gonna dig their heels in and try and keep him. And I think it's gonna blow up in their face, right, which would be a very Islanders thing to happen. You know, since the dynasty days, this kind of stuff tends to be the way things go. We'll end with one quick question. We'll do it lightning round style, okay? Whatever comes to your mind. When looking at this is from Claus Dörr, or Dörr, as he tries to remind us in his Twitter feed how to pronounce it. When looking at the prospect pipeline of each team, who will win the Stanley Cup from 2020 to 2025? I don't know if Klaus is trying to get us to name every cup winner, but just, I don't know, throw out some teams.
Well, Edmonton, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously. I mean, I think that they're going to be a dominant team. You know, I mean, their current troubles notwithstanding, they're going to be a dominant team.
Yeah. I'm going to throw out a wild card here, Philadelphia.
That was my wild card.
Yeah, because Ron Hextall has done a very good job drafting the past couple of years. And what he's done is he's gotten value and he's gotten players at all positions. So they have a ton of goalie options coming up the pipeline. Obviously, these kids aren't ready yet, but in 2023, they would all be
awesome. And one of them might actually one be out of
the
play.
Five. Yeah, one out of the five has to be there. You know, it's got to be. And obviously, Nolan Patrick's a good building block. They have a lot of nice forwards coming up. We know they have a ton of great defensemen. Mm-hmm. So that would be one option. My other would be Nashville because they're already pretty set, but then they have some really nice puck-moving defenseman coming up the pipeline.
David Ferrer, just what they needed.
Just
what they needed. Samuel Girard.
Dante Fabro. But then also, Ely Tolvanen coming up front, he is a sniper, and he is the kind of like lights-out scorer that if he can hit in the NHL, that gives them another dimension that they've never had.
Interesting. I mean, and the Leafs are obviously the other team that's going to be good for a while. Yeah. Winnipeg, if they can fix their goaltending situation, which in theory, I mean, Hellebuck is supposed to become that down the road. Lastly, when you said Nashville, it reminded me of something. I want to leave it with this, or end with this. Watch out for Nashville as a team to get in on John Tavares, because David Poile is always in on everyone. Yeah, he's so aggressive. Yeah, he's a cowboy. Yeah.
And he makes it happen.
He always goes for it. So that's a sleeper for John Tavares. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week.